Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference. Participants include Laura C. Brewer, Director of Research and Evaluation at the Applied Learning Technologies Institute at Arizona State University, and Cho-Ho Yu, Researcher at the Applied Learning Technologies Institute of Arizona State University. The session is entitled Crafting a Campus Identity, First-Year Students, Residential Life, and Social Networking.
We are from the Applied Learning Technologies Institute at Arizona State University. This is just a little bit about our group. We collaborate with members of the campus as well as off-campus community in Phoenix, and we're actually in some international and national partnerships as well. We have researchers, developers. It's a really unique place to work with a lot of interesting people from different backgrounds. And as you can hear, Alex and I both come from different backgrounds and hopefully add to our research there. This is just a little overview of our presentation today. This is about a study that we've recently conducted, like very, very recently. We just actually got our hands on our data about 3 weeks ago. So we'll just talk about some of the literature that set up the study, talk about the methodology of our online survey, and primarily also talk about the findings, our exploratory findings so far, and some of the implications that we see, and some of our future research agenda. The questions guiding this study were kind of the general question is, you know, how are today's undergraduates using social networking applications as part of their campus lives? And by campus lives, we're thinking kind of beyond specifically academic or specifically non-academic to kind of looking across those two different areas. And in particular, we're trying to understand if there's a connection between social networking use and ultimately retention and persistence. And so we decided to focus on first-year students because we know there's a higher level of dropout between the first and second year. So we're focused, our group, our data is coming from a large public Southwestern university. I wonder which one that can be. And we're looking at, again, first-year students. It's kind of setting up the study. You know, we know quite a bit about how the net generation, this group of students, which are primarily 18 and 19-year-olds, traditional age students, are using technology, you know, throughout their lives, but specifically for social, entertainment, and communication purposes. And I think we're all aiming to understand more about how they're using the newer technologies for academic purposes. Many researchers have found, you know, the skills themselves with the applications don't necessarily translate to effective teaching and learning experiences. So we're trying to focus in on social networking tools and see what can we understand about how these tools maybe are aiding in the students' campus life experiences, even if they're not necessarily truly learning experiences yet. So we're trying to get at both the social component as well as the social integration factor. Today's institutions obviously are struggling to meet these needs by today's students, you know, trying to come, you know, have the infrastructure available for students to be on wired campuses and also provide them services that meet their needs. And so, again, the focus here on social networking tools in particular to see how can institutions use these tools to attract students. Just kind of a little definitional. We're talking social networking. Others talk about social network sites, social networking sites. We chose social networking primarily because that seemed to be what the way our students were referencing the sites. So it's probably just so we wanted to speak the same language as our students, but we are aware that others prefer social network sites instead of social networking sites. We were initially going to focus our study specifically on Facebook use because we thought that's the particular site that most college students associate with. We decided as we were designing our study that we should probably ask students about a number of different sites because maybe we're just making an assumption that they're using Facebook. So we asked about six or seven particular sites, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. But I just wanted to set up you know, the fact that social networking sites have been around for a long time. Some have persisted, some have not. But ultimately, what we found, I'll show our data, is that when we asked students about the sites they use, the two predominant sites were Facebook and MySpace. So even though we put a lot out there, we had an open-ended field where they could tell us about other sites that they used, we found that less than 3% of our population actually used other sites, ever used or currently used.
Okay, so now can you hear me? Yes, you can, right? Okay. Okay, you know, I tend to talk very slow, so I think you can read the slide, and I won't repeat, you know, the points. Okay, so, you know, actually, you know, we look for the potential user of this emerging SNS to see how it can be applied into, like, to enhance and enrich learning. And some research actually has focused on, you know, how they use this approach, you know, and for social, for off-campus, you know, for off-classroom learning. One viewpoint we want to look into is about retention, you know. And there are two most well-known models on retention. One is the Tintos model, and one is the Beans model. The Tinto one is about, like, you know, the social aspect, social support, social integration. And the Beans model is more about, like, psychological, behavioral, and so on. So you may say that, well, look like, you know, two diverse models. But actually, you know, some common themes, some common ground can make them converge together. How? Well, you know, social or behavior and so on, and essentially all about what? Support, about integration, you know, about, you know, your mental well-being and so on. And actually, you know, you may say eventually this research can be expanded into not only the Tinto perspective, but also the Beans model. And so, you know, we want to see, like, how this online tools, this social networking can increase the social engagement. And eventually, you know, I predict that the so-called social aspect can lead you into the psychology aspect. And actually, you know, some online campuses, they have adopted programs that utilize the technology with features similar to this popular SNS. To my knowledge, like, you know, U of Phoenix, UP, and Capella. And also, you know, one main point is that we say, like, social support, social integration, you know, all are about, like, the population. But when we conduct research, you know, when we want to do a profiling, it means, you know, we want to find the population segment, like, you know, what group tend to be more at risk. And I think, you know, more research can be conducted, like, to look into the profiling of population segment. So, you know, we can apply this research into retention. Okay, questions remain. And do they really see any potential value of using SNS for learning and for, like, you know, off-campus non-learning experience? Also, does social networking use relate to college events result in increased social and academic integration? Now we'll go into our method section. And first, you know, we approached the Office of Rest Life to obtain, like, the permission the information at the background and so on. And more importantly, the list of email address, you know, our population. And we use the online survey. Well, you know, one important point about online survey is that, you know, when you don't have tracking, then the survey is very problematic. Especially, you know, you give incentive. For this research project, we give away one iPod Nano. Okay. So, you know, when you have no tracking, wow, iPod, why not? Just click, 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 submit, 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 you know. And so, you know, somebody can have like you know, 10 alias, you know, and to enhance his chance or her chance to earn an iPod, right? But, you know, so we use a survey server called SurveyMonkey. And when an email is sent out, then it creates a unique, you know, a one-time only link. So each email address, each person can only click on the link once, only one chance to submit your answer. And also, you know, we can track, like, you know, the actual response rate. So, you know, some email address are not good, you know, went to a dead end, bounce back. So, you know, we can keep track on that. And also, you know, we realized that in survey, one of the problematic area is what? The nature of your data, self-report data. Most people, they tend to, like, you know, to inflate, you know, their GPA, to underreport their age, you know, and so on, so on, and so on. You know, actually, there are research studies showing that, like, you know, you are lucky to get like 80% accurate data when you are using self-report data. So to compensate for that, you know, we obtain IRB permission to merge our survey data with the so-called warehouse data, the official record from ASU. So there, you cannot lie about your age and your gender or GPA. Okay. So, you know, we can get more accurate data. And the population is, as I say, you know, all incoming freshmen living on campus. As I say, you know, we obtain the email list from the Red Light office, and then, you know, we do a carpet bombing. So, you know, we send the email to the entire population. And also another major threat against survey is what? Non-respond. You know, people who tend to respond, they have some strong opinions about the matter. People, oh, I don't care. Oh, don't bother me, and so on. You know, those people, they tend not to respond. They have something else to say. Okay, but, you know, we may miss this segment. So what should we do? You know, we keep sending a reminder and reminder. Okay, and two, right? Yeah, two reminders. Also, in every message, we say iPod. Okay, so at last, you know, we can boost the response rate to about 21%. And also, you know, people who are underage, like under 18, are required not to, you know, to join the survey. Okay, the response rate is fairly good, about 21%. So, you know, we want to make sure that the sample that we obtain really reflect the entire population in terms of their gender, race, and so on. You know, these attributes. And so, as I say, you know, we have the permission to merge our survey data with the warehouse, the official record data. So, you know, we can do a comparison, in gender, in in-state, out-state, and so on. You know, to see whether we capture the like the right image. Okay. And look like a good job. Okay, so here is, you know, the breakdown of the race. And also again, you know, we do a good job. And here is the age. Okay, so, you know, most are young folks, and then, you know, we have a few older freshmen. I think now is your turn, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
As Alex said, the way that the survey was designed was so we wanted to facilitate the experience for the students so that they would persist and complete the survey. So one of the first questions we asked, well, we tell them what the survey was about in the invitation, but we encourage them, even if they are not social networking site users or not current users, to please respond. That said, one of the initial questions we asked after asking them if they were 18, because IRB requires that they be 18, was, have you ever used a social networking site? And we're using SNS just to abbreviate that. Have you ever used any social networking site? And then we asked them to specifically specify whether or not they're currently an active user of a social networking site, if they're a past user, they've used it but they're not currently using it, or if they've never used it. If they've never used it, we still captured that data, we asked them why, and we have some open-ended responses about that, but we didn't have them answer the rest of the questions. If they were a past user, again, we asked them why they're not currently using, because we can try to get some sense about patterns of why people may stop using these applications. And again, we're not asking questions from them. So most of our study is on the 93% that said that they are an active user. But again, I don't necessarily think that's representative of all of our population. I think we obviously are probably over-representing people that have experience, even though we, you know, encouraged others to respond. If they don't have an interest, it's likely they didn't. So we have to keep that in mind when we interpret the results here. We also asked folks, again, about six different sites. We asked them about Bebo, Friendster, Facebook, MySpace, LinkedIn, Orkut, Twitter, and then we had an open-ended field. And we asked them to give us the same information. Are you an active user? Are you a past user? Or have you never used? And again, surprising to us even, we thought there was going to be at least a little bit of variation, but the two applications that rose to the top and everything else fell down in the under 1%. Some things had like maybe one out of our whole 1,100 respondents. Like, we expected more Twitter users and there was like less than 10. So that was, some of those things were surprising to us. But the focus of the findings are going to be on MySpace and Facebook, because that's what our population, our respondents, were actually had experience with. But I would like to point out here that many more of the MySpace users identified themselves as past users. And I'll touch more on that, but I want to make that clear right now. The findings I'm going to present, there's kind of three major themes. One is that we asked students what they're preferred. If they had to pick one site today that they would call their preferred site, which one would it be? And what we found is whether or not they preferred Facebook over MySpace or MySpace over Facebook seemed to impact their experiences with the application. So I'm going to talk somewhat about that. This data is new to us, so what we've done so far is just some exploratory looking. So I have some cross-tabbed data that compares the two groups. The second area I'm going to talk about is kind of a general sense of how students talk about the importance of these applications to the contacts they have on campus and off campus. And then finally, I'm going to conclude with some of our open-ended findings, so the qualitative findings about how students talk about the value of these applications and their preferred applications in particular to their academic lives and to their non-academic lives, and talk about some of the distinctions about how they talk about that, because I think that that's really where you get at some of the interesting findings. One of the questions we asked was, when did you first start using a social networking site? As you can tell, most of the respondents had started in the last 1 to 2 to 3 years. Less than 20% started at age 18 or over. And again, remember, our populations are 18 to 20, a few people over 20. But most of them have been using these applications for a number of years, so we kind of can consider them somewhat experienced users. Which social networking site did they begin? And almost all of them started with MySpace. And you're going to see a shift, and we ask them, like, you know, so now why do you prefer? So I thought it was interesting that, you know, 84% said that MySpace was their first, and only 13% said that Facebook. We asked them then why. Why is this your preferred site? 76% of the respondents indicated that at that point in time, we said, as of today, what would be your preferred site? 76% said Facebook, and 24% said MySpace. Why? I've got some great quotes here, but I couldn't put them all down there. But the sense was a lot of the Facebook users are saying, Facebook is for college students. It's a more mature site. I used to use MySpace, but now I use Facebook. All my new friends use Facebook. If I want to connect with my friends on campus, I need to get on Facebook. So those that talked about connections and an identity mentioned college or ASU in their descriptions a lot more often than the MySpace preferred users. The MySpace preferred users, I mean, throughout the whole, I mean, when I was just going through all of their quotes, familiarity came up, the specific term familiar. I'm most familiar with it. I'm most comfortable with it. My old friends are on it. I can connect with my friends from high school. And I think why this kind of pattern may be important as we kind of think about retention, if we think about the fact that integration into the campus community is important for persistence. If we know that some students are identifying with a campus identity, they're changing their application to connect with people on campus versus others specifically saying, I'm sticking with my old tool. Some are saying because of comfort, you know, but others are saying that comfort is related to this connection with old, you know, old friends, high school friends. And we're talking about students that are all living on campus. So I think that might be an identifier for kind of maybe trying to identify some students that may be more likely to be less connected. Some students talked about the design of the sites in particular, and that's what attracted them. But what was interesting, those people that said the design of Facebook was why they preferred it, specifically talked about it being simple, structured, easy to set up, all the sites look the same, not annoying. There's, you know, I mean, they use this term of, you know, they liked that. You know, they liked the fact that they couldn't customize it. And completely on the contrast was the MySpace users that talked about design. They said, I like it because I can customize it. I've put all this time into creating my site. You know, I can be creative on my site. And so some of that choice has to do with the design. But what I thought was interesting was that they don't talk about the applications. They don't talk about the applications that are specific to MySpace or specific to Facebook. They talk about some of the structural design issues, but not the add-on stuff. One thing that I want to dive further into is, and I didn't see this at all on MySpace, but on Facebook, there was a small proportion of users that indicated they've chosen Facebook because it's safer. And they don't give me enough other details to understand if safer to them means safer, you know, privacy, safe, I have more privacy here, I have more security here. I don't know what safer means, but that term safer came up, so it's something we need to explore. And on the flip side, on the MySpace, the word fun came up a lot more. I choose it because it's fun, because I'm connected to my music. I mean, so music and fun were associated with MySpace. Again, seeing this distinction between the preferences, we started ask the next set of questions really throughout the remainder of the survey, say, keep your preferred site in mind and answer these questions with your preferred site. So everyone's responding either based on them being a Facebook preferred or MySpace. And again, we're dropping out the other 3% that were the other. So we see a difference in the frequency of social networking site login in relation to what your preferred site is, with Facebook users being much more likely to say that they log in several times a day to any SNS as well as to Facebook when compared to MySpace users. And I think, you know, when you get a sense, we ask also questions about time and how large their networks are, and all this trend continues with Facebook. Those that prefer Facebook having larger networks, spending more time online, on the site, and logging in more often. So I think that's an interesting distinction in the two different groups. We also asked a set of questions on mobile access. And we expected, probably because our campus has a huge mobile technology initiative, I think there was an expectation within our group as we were designing the survey, when we didn't ask these questions at first, it came up, we're missing something by not asking about using mobile technologies, for example, mobile devices like cell phones, to access social networking applications. But when we asked, we were kind of surprised to find out that only about a third of the students indicated that they'd ever used a mobile device to connect with their social networking application. And of that third, two-thirds of those people said that they use their mobile device less than 25% of the time. So currently, at least among our respondents, they don't seem to be using their mobile devices as much to use it. And when they do use their mobile device, they're using it to broadcast status updates or read status updates more often than uploading pictures, which is kind of interesting because you think if you've got your phone and your camera that it would be easy to take a picture and upload right away, but we didn't find that as frequently as we thought. Okay, so again, what I just touched on about measuring social networking experiences, with the closed-ended data, we were kind of limited. We drew from some existing studies that we could find about some of the measures that other people were using, in part because we'd like to be able to compare our findings to others. And what we were finding is people were trying to get at size of network as well as the amount of time spent, so we were trying to use some of the same items. And when looking at the number of friends on all social networking sites someone used based on their preferred social networking site. So this is asking them, how many friends do you have across every site that you're a member of? We found that the Facebook users were much more likely to say that they had 300 or more friends. We had many other categories, differentiations. I collapsed them down so I could present this here, but we went up to like 500 or more, and there was actually this group of, you know, Facebook users that were in that group as well. So Facebook users are more likely to have larger networks across all of their sites. And then across their preferred site, so across Facebook or MySpace, we also find that the Facebook users were more likely to have a larger network than the MySpace users within Facebook and within MySpace. I should point out, I am reporting the chi-square here, and if you want to see our tables, I'd be happy to share them with you. I mean, obviously, we have a pretty large respondent size, so we're more likely to get a significant difference, but not everything came out significant. So it's not like everything came out significant with this high end. We have here the numbers of hours per week on all social networking sites based on preferred social networking site. And here we see no difference, significant difference statistically, between the two groups. And again, it's kind of a bimodal distribution. So there are those users that tend to be kind of in the, more likely to be in the 2 to 3 hours, and in the 6 to 10 hours as kind of the two higher categories, but we find a distribution across. And this would be an area that we probably need to do a little more work to see what makes those hours different. Because when I get to some of the open-ended responses, you'll see that many students are very reflective and aware of the time that they spend on these sites and how that might impact their academic life. And so when you think about 11 hours a week, I mean, that's during a Monday through Friday week, that's 2 hours a day. I mean, you know, that is what we used to get crazy about for watching TV, right? And so now people are spending that on their sites, and I think they are aware of how it engages them and maybe takes them away from other things. Again, here is the number of hours per week on their preferred site based on their preferred site. So if they're a Facebook user within Facebook, and again, we see this distribution across. There is a statistically significant difference, but we don't have a way of necessarily explaining this other than knowing that there are different types of users here, and it's not like everyone's using them all the time, but we weren't able to explore any further to find out how these relate to their perceptions of value. And I think that would kind of be one of our next steps to see, since we do have a distribution like this, how are those that are using the tools more often, how are their perceptions quite different than those that are using it less often? We had a set of questions Oh, I just realized that's kind of got strange there. that was just in the switchover. That chart got a little crazy. We asked about a number of different types of contacts or types of friends folks had, and we asked them to rate on a 5-point importance scale how important is your preferred tool for connecting with these types of friends or contacts. And I've separated our list out, in part because it won't fit on one slide, but into two different types of friends or contacts. This first is non-campus friends or contacts, and this is the types of friends or contacts that actually had the greatest level of students perceived that the tools were most important for these groups, and on the top of the list is high school classmates. There was almost no significant difference across all of these, not dependent on your preferred use, so that's why I didn't split this out. This is all of our users because there really wasn't a difference. Both Facebook and MySpace users said that they found the tool most important for communicating or connecting with their high school classmates, friends they didn't see regularly, and then parents, siblings, coworkers. Again, these are all things that are not campus related. But you'll notice that down at the bottom of the chart, the lower percentages are associated with people that they don't know personally. So friends I met online, acquaintances, those they don't have a strong contact with. When we look at their campus friends and contacts, I don't know what's going on with our right justify there. But anyway, you'll see the similar sort of pattern with at the bottom of the list, the ASU students they haven't met in person, the ASU classmates they haven't met in person, the people in the residence hall that they haven't met in person, and up at the top of the list, more important would be, interestingly, at the top of this list is advisors and faculty, because when I ask students how they're using the tool for academic purposes, like 6 out of the 250 that commented that they currently are using the tool for academic purposes, 6 mentioned faculty, instructors, teachers, yet they are saying that it's important for them. So, you know, I don't know if it's they wish they had more contact, at least this 50% or so, with their faculty and advisors. It's not that they're not reporting, at least in the qualitative, that they actually have that contact currently. The Office of Residential Life was really interested in how students are using the application to connect with their roommate because they don't systematically use that as a point of contact. So we were kind of curious about how many students would actually have used the tool to make contacts with their roommates before coming to campus. So we're asking, did you make contact with your roommate? Because these are, again, all first-year students in the residence halls, and when. And I mean, we were a little surprised to find out that such a high proportion of students had actually used their preferred tools to make contacts with their roommates prior to our institution starts at the end of August. So a lot of this contact was made before school started. I did ask an open-ended question. I'm not reporting here, but I have gone through some of the data asking them how those contacts were made, and it was almost all self-initiated. The students either looked them up or the prospective roommate looked them up. And it was interesting, and I need to go through and do a little more analysis, but you know, some people talked about how it made an initial contact and then they followed up on the phone. Other people indicated that they connected online and went through everything they needed for their apartment. They were real specific. So it's gonna be kind of interesting to go through that data a little bit more. But this gets into kind of recruitment issues and starting to create a social network for retention purposes before students actually even come to the campus, physically are there. How can we start to get them connected? We also asked students about whether or not they had joined a residential life group within their preferred social network. So we first asked them, are you a member of any groups? Then we filtered, and then if they aren't a member of a group at all within their site, have you joined one related to your residence hall? We did ask Residential Life if they have any kind of systematic planning or communication through the social networking tools. It's completely up to each residence hall. I'm having a mental block, but whatever the staff, they're not called, I think, RAs anymore. I'm dating myself, but whatever the staff member that lives on the floor, they decide how they're going to use the tool. And so, again, because there's such a different experience of Facebook users and MySpace users, I think this is really important. How do we make sure that someone's not getting left out just because their preferred social networking tool is not the one that the residence hall, you know, I'll call our RA because I can't remember what we call them, but what the RA actually uses. So 68% of the Facebook users indicated that they are connected with groups related to the residence halls, and when we ask them about these groups, their ways for them to communicate what's going on in the hall, many of them are created by the staff, but there's also obviously groups that are made by other classmates or other residence hall mates, and they can definitely articulate to us in their open-ended responses how they use these tools for these social purposes, to connect for parties, to find out about events, to find out. But when we, again, talk to them about how they could possibly use it for academics, things kind of fall apart there. But here, 68% compared to the 35% of the MySpace users that indicated that they had joined a group related to their residence hall. When did you join the group? The MySpace users were more likely to have more recently joined. Now, we don't know if that's because the groups are just now developing, or the MySpace users, since they're not on their networks as often and not connected to as many people, are taking them a longer time to find out about the groups that are out there. And again, this is an area where we would need to study more, but there is a significant difference between the MySpace and the Facebook users here, preferred users. We asked then the students, does your preferred social networking site improve or enrich your academic life? And 37% of the Facebook users said, yes, they thought it does. And 15% of the MySpace users said, yes, they thought it did. In comparison, when we asked them the same question about their non-academic, so campus life that's not related to teaching and learning, which is how we would define academic, but I learned from the students' responses that they may need a definition because some of them seem to not be able to distinguish academic from non-academic. Others seem to have no problem. But in comparison here, 70% of the Facebook users said, yes, you know, it's improving my non-academic life, and 44% of the MySpace users. So again, they're better able to see the connections to the social, and harder, it's much more difficult for them to see the connections to the academic. So excuse me while I get, the qualitative stuff is the most interesting and always the hardest to present at conferences because I got to pick out one little clip and it's never representative of, you know, the rich data that we have. But one of the things I want to point out is, when, you know, we have this open-ended response and only 275 people put in any information regarding how their current use of their preferred social networking site could improve or enrich their academics. This is small when you think of, you know, the fact that we had over 1,100 respondents, but it makes sense when you think about only 37% of the Facebook users and 15% of the MySpace users actually thought that the site could improve their academics. When I looked in, I did search, because any of you that are college, university faculty know that first-year students don't refer to you as faculty or professors or any of the other terms that they come to learn as they go through their college career, and they still call you teachers because that's where they are. They've only been at the university for 6 weeks. So I searched teacher, I searched professor, instructor, anything I could think through their open-ended, and I could find only 6 quotes that even mentioned faculty in any way. And of those 6, half of them, 3, talked about faculty in this way. Facebook enriches my academic life at ASU because I'm able to ask people about different classes I may be taking, which professors I should take. So the other quotes were like, I can find out what are the good professors. So it's not about connecting with you all to get some support on academics or to integrate, you know, teaching and learning into the site. It's to talk to their classmates about you, which I thought was interesting. Most people that talked about the value of the sites currently talked about connecting with their classmates in study situations, these informal study groups, which is great. I mean, so that was great that they could, at least this small group, can think about the fact that I can use these sites to connect with others. So this person says, if I miss the class or I need help with homework, I can quickly change my status on Facebook so that everyone can see what's up and then respond ASAP. It's a very quick way to get questions answered. Another person said, you know, it helps me find study groups, and there was a lot of examples like this. Then I asked them, or we asked them, what about possible use? Not what you're currently doing, but what do you think you could? So let's think about what's possible out here, because we hope that students, as they have this experience that is probably much more advanced than most of their faculty, that maybe they can envision ways to use these sites for academic purposes. And so I did the search again, and there was definitely more mention of professor and teachers, in relation to classes. So they are, some students are able to think about, well, it might be a good idea if I can connect with my teacher. And I was expecting more kind of pushback on that. Like, I don't want my faculty into my space or my Facebook. But I didn't see that. I saw stuff like this. If teachers had it, they could post assignments and everything that needs to be done. It's a public email so that all classmates could see the questions being asked. So kind of thinking of maybe like an old discussion board kind of a process. They can get in contact with faculty on matters related to class. A number of students mentioned that they wanted to be able to get in contact with advisors. But again, many of I had over 700 response here. So even those students that aren't currently doing it, they can think about how they might do it. And many of those students, again, talk about connecting with their classmates, study groups. So it's nice that these students are able to think in that way on the academic. I also asked them about the preferred social networking site as a possible obstacle to enriching their academic life. So how about, is this in any way can be an obstacle? We had, again, nearly 700 people respond, and by far the common theme, and they use this word distraction, I'm not summarizing it, but in their quotes is this word distraction. Facebook is very extremely distracting. You can chat with people and look for profiles for hours and not realize the time is passing you by. I would probably be doing better if I wasn't such an active user. So very reflective here. I'm easily distracted and could easily slip into doing dozens of other things not related to my work if I'm not careful. They also talked about an issue of cheating or a perception of cheating. And because we're kind of running short and I want to have some time for Q&A, I won't read these, but they are concerned not only that they might help someone cheat or someone might cheat by them participating or connecting with them, but they're also concerned that if faculty are on the site, that they might perceive them as cheating if they see them engaging with another student and discussing material in class. So I think that's something for us to be aware of as we think about how we might create some systematic programs here. I'm not going to go, I don't have as many quotes here. Students didn't have any problems articulating on the non-academic side, talking about connecting with clubs and athletics and events and parties and meeting new people, communicating with friends. They have a pretty good, they're pretty able to communicate there. But when we talk about obstacles, it's interesting that they're more MySpace than Facebook, and I haven't been as systematic in this analysis, but I was pretty clear when I was looking through the quotes. More MySpace users were more likely to say, not everyone uses my preferred network. No one at ASU uses my preferred network. I had people say, MySpace is for East Coast. No one here uses it. And I did actually look across our non-resident and residents, and I didn't find a pattern like that. So, but they have a perception that I'm an outsider because I use MySpace. And I think we need to be aware of that. The other thing is many students are worried that if they spend too much time online, they're not actually going to have the personal face-to-face contact. So they consider that as an obstacle. And I hate to rush through our implications because it's the most important part. But implications, some of the things we see specifically for campus administrators and faculty. One is whatever type of program we are considering and initiatives we're considering, we should be mindful of the different site preferences among the students and how those might impact their ability to connect in the networks you're trying to build. And also be aware that students are not clear about how to use these two tools to improve their learning. So we can't rely on them to come up with the solutions. We're going to need to be more proactive and actually give students instructions on how we expect they might use these tools to improve their teaching and learning. And this is very similar with past technologies. I mean, a lot of times we go into a new technology and we think students know, they know how to use this, so they must know how to use it for teaching and learning, but we know that they don't think about these tools that way. For campus recruiters and residential life staff, consider ways to facilitate prospective students to connect with existing students. There was some mentioning of mentoring, and could we start up some mentoring types of relationships between prospective students and current students using social networking tools? And also providing contact information specifically related to your social networking site. So not just an email and a telephone number when you're sending out roommate information, but how about my preferred social networking site, and here's how you contact me. For student services staff, again, the next step would be kind of using this data as we gather more and understand more to try to identify those students that might be more at risk students and in developing ways that we can support those students to try to prevent them from dropping out. exploratory. We're still exploring. It's exciting. We've got a lot of great data, and I would love to connect with anyone who's doing similar research. So I'm going to give us some contact information. We know we need some longitudinal data to best examine retention, and so we're planning and moving forward. Residence Life would like to continue to work with us. The qualitative data is so valuable. Next steps is focus groups that can really drill down and maybe define a smaller population instead of looking at all these students. How about defining a particular set of groups that are maybe non-academic as well as academic settings, and trying to get at how are students and faculty or students and club leaders using these sites, and what are their perceptions of them? So questions and answers, and I'll leave up our contact information during this time. But we'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. Yes.
You mentioned some of the possible uses of the SNS, and one of them is fed back things like post assignments, contact faculty. And I'm wondering, how does that potentially supplant an LMS? I mean, how does that
right.
work?
Yeah, we've had discussions within our own department. I think that what I found interesting was that some people, some faculty or people that are supporting faculty have said right off the bat that students don't want faculty in their social networking sites. So I thought that was particularly interesting to see that I wasn't seeing very many students say, I don't want you here. I mean, yes, they do have some concerns, but nowhere near the type of concerns we think they have, because when we look at their sites, we think, why would they want me to be looking at this? They are not thinking that. So maybe I think we need to be more proactive about how we might be able to integrate them, and not necessarily, it's not that one takes the place of the other. I don't think we're suggesting that. Yeah.
You had a slide that said 37% said yes, it does enhance my academic life.
Right.
How many said no, it doesn't, versus
I don't know.
I'm not sure. Or
I have the data. The interesting thing was, I actually need to go through all of the open-ended, because even those that said yes, sometimes have a hard time articulating, and still I wonder if that's not an I don't know. I mean, they're saying yes, but they can't really tell me why, or they choose not to tell me why. But I don't know, I don't remember off the top of my head, but I can definitely pull it up for you. It was a yes, no, and I don't know response, so I do have that. Yes, in the back. Right.
And
good point.
Related to that, public high schools only recently started giving out email addresses to spread that community. That's also enough. You asked a lot of questions about MySpace and Facebook. Why I started on this. That's something to look at.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else? Yep.
Just curious, what percentage of respondents were currently active?
The way the question, I do have information. Actually, the first slide that I presented was asked of all students how active they were. And I think if you go, let's see if I can find it. But all the ones that followed, they had to focus on their preference. But we did ask across all the different, the six that we listed or seven that we listed. Hold on, we'll get there. It's the one right after the respondents. Oh, that was it. No, that one before this, I'm sorry. This one. Okay, so this is whether or not they are currently a user, past user, or never used of both. So, I guess not. I would have to run another variable to see both. I have either or in this case, but they didn't have to choose one or the other. So 62% were saying they were a member of MySpace currently, compared to 88.6% of the Facebook. But that is a good question of how many are using both right now. I can check into it, and I can let you know.
Yeah. Were there any questions regarding a separate social networking service from the university itself?
Ah.
And rather than using Facebook, to separate the personal from their information?
We didn't ask a specific question. I've seen that in the literature, and obviously there are applications out there that are designed for institutions to but we didn't ask a question asking about that. Although one of the interesting things I found, and I can't tell you what proportion of the users, but some people said they didn't like having multiple sites. It's too much to check. So it's like I had to give up my MySpace to be a Facebook user because I just don't have time to check them all. There is some of that in the open-ended. So I wonder, and this is just total speculation, if the institution adopted a separate application, is it just like one more thing and therefore becomes less interesting to them because it takes too much more of their time? I don't know. I mean, that's just speculation, but it would be a good question to ask, definitely.
I wonder, too, if wanting to use MySpace versus Facebook, whichever, the audience for user base is
both broader
than the same institution.
Right.
True.
Yeah, that's a good point. Anything else? Okay. Thank you. And we will upload the slides to the EDUCAUSE site, so feel free, or you can please contact either one of us by email. We'd be happy to share with you. Again, we're at the beginning stages. Hopefully there'll be more soon.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Stream multi-format audio and video to PCs and mobile devices with Helix Server from Real. Information at realnetworks.com.